They came for Luke that night. At that morning's farce of a trial, Luke had been found guilty of a crime he couldn't remember, but was certain he hadn't committed. Then Gavar Jardine had dragged him from Kynaston's east wing. He'd slung him in here, a small chamber beneath the kitchens. It was stone-walled, chilly, and unlit. Groping around in the darkness had identified only a thick wooden counter and some empty barrels. The air had a musty sourness that seeped into your skin. Kynaston wasn't the sort of place to have dungeons, and besides, the Jardines didn't need to lock people up to restrain them. So this place must be a part of the wine cellars. Which meant that close by, life was going on as normal, and Kynaston was still full of hundreds of equals. So much had happened since the ball where Chancellor Zelston had died. The East Wing's annihilation and restoration. His own trial. Croven's skillful fight with Jackson and its catastrophic end. The equals would doubtless linger at the Jardine estate to pick over it all. Slaves would be up and down to the kitchens and cellars regularly too. One of them would have keys for this room, or could get word to Abby, who could surely find some. So Luke had spent the next few hours banging on the door to attract attention. When his fists became sore, he kicked it instead, though he knew better than to imagine he might kick it down. He shouted until he was hoarse, then rested his voice and redoubled his pummeling before shouting some more. But not even this physical commotion was as exhausting as the confusion in his brain. In whatever direction Luke turned his thoughts, he ran into the same dead ends of incomprehension and ignorance. Someone had killed Zelston, and it had to be Luke himself. But only the deed was his, not the intention. Doc Jackson had defended him, yet Jackson was an aristocrat, an equal, and so had also deceived and betrayed him. Luke's memories of the past 24 hours were a maze in which he wandered, utterly lost. As the day wore on and no one came, Luke sagged against the door, drained. Eventually, he must have fallen asleep slumped against it. When he woke, it was because the door had been opened from the outside, causing him to spill forward over the boots of someone on the threshold. The person's identity was hard to make out, thanks to the dazzle of a star-bright light they cupped in one hand. "I'm not the rescue party," said Cillian Jardine. "Sorry."
"Get up."
Some tiny voice in Luke's skull urged him.
"Run!"
But he was shattered, and no part of him obeyed. Neither his leaden legs nor his bruised hands. Luke opened his mouth, but only a croak emerged. The young master screwed up his face and slid his feet out from under Luke's huddled body. The equal folded his fingers and extinguished the light. The next thing Luke knew, Cillian was crouched over him in the darkness, one hand curled in the collar of his now filthy white shirt, the other pressed against his temples. Luke shuddered at the touch. When the equals were done hurting you on the outside, they could always hurt you some more on the inside. But there wasn't any pain.
"I have questions," Cillian whispered. "And right now, you're the best chance I have of finding some answers."
The equal's cool fingers trailed down the side of Luke's face. When he gripped Luke's jaw, for a mad moment Luke thought the boy was going to bend down and kiss him. But it was more intimate and far worse than that. Something inside him writhed and leapt at the equal's touch. And Cillian must have felt it too, because that creepily radiant smile lit his face as if he'd conjured back his skill light. His hand moved down to Luke's neck, and Luke's pulse throbbed beneath the pressure of Cillian's calloused fingers, as if it might burst and spray them both with bright, arterial blood. An image came unbidden into his head of Jackson on all fours in front of the Parliament of Equals, pure light exploding from every pore as Croven triumphed.
Luke closed his eyes against the unbearable memory. But Cillian was so close that Luke couldn't avoid the feather trace of his breath as he spoke. "If you don't try to escape," Cillian Jardine murmured, "I won't let him break you. Not beyond repair." Then the hand disappeared, and Luke heard himself groan with relief. He opened his eyes to see Cillian brushing the knees of his jeans as he stood up. "He's fit for travel," Cillian announced, with his usual brisk carelessness. He was addressing someone who waited further along the dim passageway. "I'll undo Kynaston's binding at the gate, so he's all yours. Come on, Luke. Don't keep your new master waiting." The boy offered a slender hand to Luke, who stared at it, then turned away and grabbed the doorframe for support. Luke wasn't entirely play-acting as he laboured to pull himself upright, but it gave him a few precious seconds to think. New master.